And we're back. Is that good?
Yeah,
that
man.
Good energy?
I think it's great energy,
we're,
man.
And we're back.
back. Fucking explosion sound effects everywhere, gunshots, all of that shit.
We're very much assuming this will be the first episode you hear back from our hiatus, mm-hmm. which I guess is up to us. So it better be. It better be the first one you hear, unless something goes horribly wrong. but we're back. We took a few weeks off. Sorry, a couple months off.
Word.
So that we could bank episodes for y'all. And we're finally back with The Simpsons season one. So it has come to this. Oh, man. But, you know, we're not recording this recently. We're recording this way in the past, if you're hearing it. So we're just like a few days outside of the Oscar debacle. You all know what one we're talking about. That just despicable occurrence that happened at the Oscars. Cruella won an Academy Award.
The fuck is that about, man?
A disaster.
What the fuck is that about?
it was actually for wardrobe. You know, like if you're going to give it to anything for that movie, I'm actually more upset that Mitchell's lost 10
Yeah, I was just about to say, shout out to Mitchell's.
Yeah.
Shout out to Mitchell's for sure. Definitely one of the best animated movies I've seen in a while. So
it's so good, man. I watched it twice. It's so good. Maybe I need to give Encanto another chance, but. I do too.
I don't know.
I like it. I liked Encanto. I felt fine about being like, that was good. But according to everyone else, it's the best. So, but Mitchell's, I don't know. I don't see myself liking it more than Mitchell's. So,
you know, I was talking to Bree and I was saying how, like, because, okay, right? Like, I feel like, and many other people, it's not even just us, even people that fucking love Encanto, right? Like, a lot of people feel like Mitchell's is the superior film. So that's one thing. But also, this kind of clarifies that this is already something that we already knew, but this is just a further example of, like, how they obviously don't watch these movies before they vote for them, because they would have picked Flea, probably. You know what I mean? Like, because that's like the Oscar baity thing. So
but it's also crazy because they basically did the bullshit thing again where they call animated movies for kids while Flea is in is nominated this year. Decidedly not for children.
Man, it just take one real motherfucker to get up there and be like, man, I'm not reading this shit. Animation is for everybody, yada, yada, yada. Somebody got to do it, and I don't know who's going to do it.
It makes me so upset that they bring up all of the actresses who play the inferior live action counterparts to their animated characters in order to shit on animation.
I didn't even see them say all of that. I just heard people tell me that they said it. And it wasn't a surprise to me because they do that every time. Like
every time.
Yeah, I remember them doing that last time. So, but yeah, I didn't fucking know that.
Whatever. I mean, it's just to be expected at this point. Like, if you look at the history of the Oscars, and especially this award, the Academy Award for Best Animated Feature, it is like there's been like 22 wins, and it's been a Disney property 13 or 14 of those times. That's just the case. Unless it's transcendent and pierces the zeitgeist in a way that we don't often see, it's not going to beat Disney. It is kind of crazy that early on, even though like I will make arguments that there are years that things that Disney should have won over other things, like sorry, Monsters Inc. over Shrek. But but you know, it's so like there's so many years where I'm looking through there and I'm like, oh yeah, this like these are good, they're good Disney movies. Not to say they're bad, but like these aren't winning because they're the best movie. They're winning because they have the most recognition. They have the most name recognition.
I feel like a lot of people voting just kind of went like, oh, my kid watches this Encanto shit every fucking day.
Yes, I'm not
just
exactly.
vote for that. You know what I mean? And
exactly.
Then, I don't know.
That's exactly right. It's frustrating.
And you know, sometimes like that'll work in a movie's favor. Like, Because sometimes, like, the most popular movie would be the one deserving, right? Like Spider-Verse. When Spider-Verse won,
yes. It was,
I feel like that might have been part of it, too. Deserving. Yeah, it was definitely the most deserving. And it was, like, yeah, I guess it was the most. What else came out that year? It was, like, Incredibles Wreck-It Ralph 2.
Oh, I think it was. Oh, was that one also up? Yeah.
Yeah, Wreck-It Ralph 2 for sure.
The one that was its real competition was Incredibles 2. I believe. But that is, I think, an example of one that pierced the zeitgeist. It was so different.
Exactly.
It was there's already so many Spider-Man movies, and yet this one stood out amongst those and amongst all of these other animated films. It just had such a unique style and flair, and it just approached animation differently.
So how do we classify what happened with Rango? Like, what the fuck was that? Like, how did Rango win? I mean, it should have, but how do we even, like...
That is a good question. Gore Verbinski is such an interesting filmmaker. That is... Let's look at that year. I think it's because of the lack of competition that year.
Cars,
I think...
right?
It's Cars, right? It's I think it was probably a Cars year because there's no nomination. I think it was Cars 2 year because there's no Cars.
Cars 2, right.
So I will say, I mean, I haven't seen it, but I imagine you would look at this lineup and say Chico and Rita deserved that.
Oh, fuck. Yeah, not that I've seen Chico and Rita.
But it was up against a Cat in Paris, which I haven't seen, which looks great. French animated, beautifully animated. Kung Fu Panda 2, which is a sequel, and Puss in Boots, which is a spinoff. You know, like, and I, you know, like, I'm not like a Rango head. I'm not like the biggest Rango guy, but I like that Rango one.
I do like that Rango one.
Yeah.
I like that Rango one. I like that. I feel like I might even like Rango a little more than Puss in Boots.
I do. So I definitely do. I've never seen Kung Fu Panda 2, Chico Me neither, or Cat
so I can't
Paris,
even. I can't do that.
But it's between those two. I like Rango more. But I also just like is it stop motion or is it just look like it's stop motion?
Well, Rango? No, it's CG.
It's CG.
It's
a really
fucking pretty
style.
CG. Yeah, it's really like.
It looks really cool.
It's fucking ugly. All the animals look dried out because they're in the desert. And like, it looks like a Western. It's shot. It's like designed to look like it was shot like a Western. Like, it's really.
Man, you know what upsets me? I still haven't seen this one, but the following year, 2012, there were three stop motion animated movies up, which is so cool. Paranorman, Frankenweenie, and the Pirates, Band of Misfits were all three up in that list of five. And the other two were Brave and Wreck-It Ralph, and Brave won. Seen Brave.
You said,
but even if you're going to give it to a Disney, like, Wreck-It Ralph is better than Brave. Sorry.
Wreck-It Ralph is 1,000,000% better than Brave. You said it was Paranorman, Frankenweenie, and Pirates, too?
Yeah.
Oh, man. All of those, like, people love all of those more than they love Brave. That's so fucking funny.
It's
well,
bizarre,
maybe,
man.
I don't know,
like
maybe
Brave.
Not Frankenweenie, I guess. I don't really hear too much about
Frankenweenie. Yeah, people don't rave about Frankenweenie, but it is Tim Burton, and, like, the animation is excellent. I probably... My gut says Paranorman is the one I like the best out of these five. But I don't know, man. Like, I just look at this category at the Oscars and it bums me out. Like, when I see, like...
It's just, you know what, though? A lot of these movies do deserve awards, though. They just don't deserve to be bunched in with movies that aren't the same kind of movie.
It
bums
me out so hard when I see, like, Miyazaki's films lose to... to lesser films. Like why did Frozen beat The Wind Rises? Why did Big Hero 6 beat The Tale of the Princess Kaguya? Why, like, I just think there's so many factors when they look at these things. I don't think people take the foreign films seriously. Like, what what foreign animated film has ever won? I think a single one. I think it's a single one, and that
Spirited Away. Yeah,
it's a bummer.
Can't think of anything else.
Like, truth, if I'm being honest, granted, this is, it's all subjective, but, like, I don't know if there's a single movie I would choose over any of Miyazaki's movies if they were up for these awards. But, you know, you get stuff like Secret of the Kells isn't that isn't that? It's an Irish and French animated film. Those that gets nominated but doesn't win. The Illusionist is French. That gets nominated but doesn't win. Cat in Paris, Chico and Rita, they get nominated but don't win. Ernest and Celestine and The Wind Rises get nominated. They lose to Frozen. Nice. Song of the Sea, Pale Princess Kaguya, both go up against Big Hero 6 and lose. Like,
nice.
I don't know. It just seems like there's a pattern. Okay,
it feels like it seems like there's a pattern, and it feels like whenever they add one or two foreign films to the category, it feels like they're meeting a quota. Like everything about that category just feels patronizing to me as a fan of animation. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like. And I don't know what it's going to take to change that, but it is what it is, I guess.
And
that's
like,
what the Annies are for.
Right. And the Annies aren't perfect, but the Annies still at least, like, they got it right this year. Mitchells. They got it right.
Right. Yeah.
But, yeah, I don't know. I mean, will any award show ever be able to, like, overcome the political bureaucratic aspect to truly give out awards?
No way.
Like, there's always going to be people who complain and or disagree. That's just always how it's going to be.
Right.
And I just wish there was a little more variety in the choices, because you look back, Encanto, Soul, Toy Story 4, and then Spider-Verse broke through. And then Coco, Zootopia, Inside Out, Big Hero 6, Frozen, Brave. Come on. Like, come on. I like Big Hero 6.
I like Big Hero 6 too.
I don't think I would have chosen it that year. I am one of the few who thinks Inside Out's a little overrated. I know I'm
I kind of do too. I
think it's good. It's a good
one. I'm just sick of people acting like it's like top five. I think that's what annoys me. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like,
dude, I know. It's mid to me. It's mid tier Pixar, which is still very good.
They're all fucking good movies. And that's important, is that they're all good movies. I just don't. There's no way that it is very, very easy for me to name five Pixar movies better than Inside Out. You know what I mean? And that's not a dig.
I like at least 10 more than Inside Out.
It's not a dig on Inside Out. It's just.
Right.
They come on, bro. Like, you already got to put three Toy Stories before it. You already got to do that. You know what I mean?
I would put four Toy Stories above it.
You feel me? So, like, come on, man.
Oh, man.
You got to put four Toy Stories in front of you. You got to put The Incredibles in front of it. You got to put Ratatouille. Like, come on. All right.
You know what it also beat, which is actually a great transition into our next plug. It beat Anomalisa, which bums me out because Anomalisa is incredible.
What it beat Anomalisa? Inside Out?
Yeah.
Hell on Earth. They showed a hammer in Anomalisa.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. But that brings us to what we want to say. While we've been gone, we have been plugging away at the Patreon. So if you aren't a member of our Patreon, and maybe we're waiting to hold out until we add more content.
Bang for your buck.
Now's potentially a good time. We covered Anomalisa. So here's the list of what we've covered so far. And honestly, by the time this comes out, we'll have like three or four more episodes. So actually, I wrote it out. Let me YouTube. I did a little plug for us on the pod today.
Nice.
Or on the channel today. Let's see. Okay, so the full list that we have recorded so far is Shrek, Shrek 2, Shrek the Third, Shrek Forever After, Puss in Boots, for all you Shrek heads out there.
That's right.
Then we got Anomalisa, Paddington 2, Ted and Ted 2. We did a funny little mini series where we did the most wholesome teddy bear movie and the least wholesome teddy bear movie.
That's right.
Which was truthfully pretty entertaining. It was fun to do. Check out that Ted 2 episode. I haven't listened back yet, but it was one of the few times where all of us just didn't like something.
Oh, yeah. We were so fucking mad.
We were having a fun time.
We were all so fucking mad. But the Ted 1 episode is like me being somewhat of a Ted apologist, but not all the way. And Johnny kind of stepping his foot in there, and then Mikey just like, no, fuck out of here. Turn this shit off.
I had a fun time talking about those movies with you guys, though. That was great. So, and then also, like, what you're going to get probably by the time this comes out is we're doing the Toy Stories. We're doing Toy Story 1 through 4 leading up to Lightyear. Lightyear will probably be an episode that drops on the main feed, but if you want us to build up to it, then you got to check out the Patreon.
Right.
And we got thoughts on Toy Stories. We might get into some arguments, but overall we love them all, so it's gonna be fun.
Absolutely all good movies. As I you saw that IGN Pixar list that was going around.
Yeah I didn't bother, man.
I didn't either, bro. I really didn't either, bro. And then my the next morning my roommate texted me and he sent me the link to the article and he was like, I'm bugging because this don't look like a bad list. And I was like, you definitely bugging, bro. And here's why. And then I was explaining it to him. And I was like, see, the reason you probably looked at it and was like, oh, it's not that bad is because you just kind of look at it and go, oh, these are all good movies. And you just say, fuck it. And it's like, right. Like, don't pay it any mind. You know what I mean?
Well, right off the bat, they put Cars 3 below Cars 2, which is insane.
Which is, yeah.
That's nuts.
They bugged
Cars
out.
Cars 2 is so, like, Cars 3 is a lot better than Cars 2. I think Cars 3 is still pretty low on the list, but somebody at Pixar is like a Cars 2 somebody at IGN is a Cars 2 apologist to put for it above. Sure. And then, like, you know, it's not my favorite, but Monsters U is really low on the list. And I don't know, man. I really think they've only made a few bad ones. And it feels like they're definitely like skewing so that the newer stuff is lower. Like everything that came out in the last few years is 12 or below, you know, it's like the bottom half. It's, I don't know, like ultimately you're never going to find a list that everyone's happy with.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't even bother looking at this one, man. And I know we disagree about this, but it bums me out that Toy Story 3 is so highly considered the best Toy Story. I think it's a good movie. I think it's still top 6 or 7 or 8, somewhere on there. Like, I think all 4 Toy Stories are among the best Pixars.
We'll figure it out.
Toy Story 2 is too low. Toy Story too low on your list, IGN.
Nice. nice.
All right. And with that, I think we should probably cue the theme song and start talking about the Simpies.
I've been watching them for years. It's always been something that fit with all the animated characters that's doing their own bits. With a fry who's in the future and a family guy that sucks. With a father from a hill, a burger family runs about. The show with spies is the same guy, except he totally same. End of verse.
Let's watch cartoons that burn.
That's bananas.
As rough.
What the f*** is up, everybody? Welcome to Cartoons That Curse, the podcast about cartoons that say swear words, aka adult animated films. My name is Johnny. I'm here with my co-host Tariq. Tariq, how are you today?
I'm great. Now that we're finally talking about The Simpsons.
Finally talking about The Simpsons. If you're not familiar, like, the whole reason Tariq and I decided to do this podcast is because we jumped on a call to talk about collabing and we just didn't stop geeking out about The Simpsons. We just were like, remember this episode? Remember this? Yeah, remember this episode? Remember this? It was the best. And we just realized that we both had like an affinity for these adult animated shows that we grew up on and that we both love them dearly. And that they inspired us and like kind of helped us become who we are, truthfully. Yeah, like partially absolutely. Raised us.
Yeah, bro.
And I think The Simpsons is likely we talked about Futurama already. We talked about a lot of ones that we love, but like The Simpsons is the show. Like, this is the show.
Yeah.
This is it. This is the one. And so we're talking about Simpsons season 1 today. If you're if you're new, we normally do mini series. So like normally you would just see next week, like, or in 2 weeks, we talk about Simpsons season two. Instead, we're doing a new thing on this. We just took a hiatus. We're doing Simpsons season one. And we're also recording about Family Guy season one, King of the Hill season one, South Park season one, Bob's Burgers season one. We're going to do all of those and release them all one at a time. So, and then we're going to decide what series we want to go down that road with. So we're covering season ones, and today we're starting with the Simpsons season one, which, fascinating history of Simpsons season one. Fascinating history. Tariq, how do you feel about Simpsons season one in general? Like, how do you think it feels compared to the seasons that came after it?
Yeah, you know what's funny is that, like, people always kind of treat it like it's a different show when it first starts. And I guess I always did too, but like after watching these 13, it's not that different. It's rough. It is rough around the edges. You know what I mean?
Yep.
But at the same time, like, that roughness is like the charm in it. You know, like, the show never looks like this again, for better or for worse. You know,
yeah.
And like, and the way it is written is like jokes in this season. I'm like, oh, they would have did that in like season 4 or 5,
right?
Like,
I do feel like
here this early.
I think the big difference for me is it almost feels like this season is a little more focused on the premises than the comedy. There is good comedy. There's really funny stuff. But I feel like the thing that stands out and why I love season one of The Simpsons is how kind of heavy these premises get. This is almost like, this, obviously there's shades of this later in the show, but this is like a season that is really about a struggling family.
They have
their issues, and they don't like undercut those issues with humor. It's those are the focus of these episodes.
Mm-hmm.
Should we talk about the history of this show though? Because it's got a crazy history.
Yeah. There you go. Matt Groening. Doing this comic strip, Life in Hell. And somebody gave a print of one of those comic strips to James L. Brooks, who ended up producing the Tracy Ullman show.
Mm-hmm.
And he realized he wanted little cartoon things in the middle of it, cartoon shorts in the middle of it. So he reached out to Matt. Matt came in for the meeting, and somebody walked past and said, "I can't wait to hear your new idea." And he said, "Excuse me?" So in 15 minutes, he panicked and drew a random family and named everybody after members of his family. His mother, Marge, his dad, Homer, his sister, Lisa, his other sister, Maggie. Maggie.
And then he changed his name to Bart.
To Bart.
Which is an anagram of Brat.
Brat, yeah. Maggie Groening actually ended up marrying Craig Bartlett, who created Hey Arnold.
No way, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
Hey Arnold got its start as a comic strip in Simpsons Illustrated.
I didn't know that either. What the heck?
it was a comic strip in Simpsons Illustrated, and it was shorts on Sesame Street, like claymation shorts on Sesame Street.
I remember the claymation. Wow. Wild.
Yeah.
So Groening goes haphazardly, pitches this thrown together family sitcom.
Mm-hmm.
And they did like 3 seasons worth. There's like almost 50 shorts. There's like almost 50 Simpsons shorts, which we were just talking about how stupid it is that so many of them haven't been released officially. I have some Simpsons VHSs, and in between each VHS has 2 episodes, and in between them, there's 1 short. So I've seen all those, and I've watched them all. I've downloaded and watched them all, but a lot of them are shitty quality because they've never released them officially officially. So, but they made a lot of them.
They were animated
by Klasky Csupo.
Mm-hmm. Rugrats Studio.
Exactly. Rugrats Studio. And the original animators were Wes Archer, David Silverman, and Bill Kopp. Archer and Silverman would go on to do seasons 2 and 3, so they would continue to do the show. And obviously, they became probably the most celebrated, maybe not most celebrated, but they are the most consistent and persistent and directors in Simpsons history, I would say.
Wes Archer went on to practically define adult animation. He's directed on King of the Hill. He's still directing on Rick and Morty. You know what I mean? Like, he's still doing shit. And David Silverman is my personal favorite Simpsons director. And he directed the movie.
He was the guy that got in to bring the movie.
Yeah, and every time they go to theaters, they get him. Because he does all of those, he does those shorts on Disney Plus that I don't like. But he also did the theatrical Maggie shorts, the first one that got
The daycare, Longest Daycare. I love that one. I think that's really good.
Shit's good.
It's a cool history. Also, I didn't realize until I learned today that at Klasky Chupo, their colorist was the guy who decided to, or the person who decided to make them yellow. I didn't know that was a decision made in the animation. I just found that out. I was like, oh, I thought that was just part of what they did.
Because I know, like, the reasoning was, if you're flicking through the channels, it doesn't look like anything else. So you're just like, what's this yellow thing? And then, like,
pretty smart.
That's what makes you stay. And, you know, let the record be known, Tracy Ullman hated the Simpsons shorts. Mm-hmm. She didn't want him to be a part of the show. She was actually supposed to be Marge, but she felt like she had better things to do.
And then she sued to try and get money for it after its success, thinking she was owed for its success.
Right.
And, you know, like, I like Tracy Ullman. I think she's got an important place in TV and comedy history. But that was a big fat L that you deserve to take, Tracy Ullman.
That's definitely an L. And then at a certain point, they come to Matt and they say they want to do a special, like I guess some kind of half hour special, something with the family. And then I don't remember whose decision it was, but somebody was like, oh, let's just do a show. Fuck it.
Right.
And then
and they did.
Yeah.
And the other interesting thing is that Castellaneta and Kavner, Julie Kavner and Dan Castellaneta, were Tracy Ullman cast members. They were only cast because they were already on the Ullman show.
They were there already.
And like, fortunately, they got Castellaneta, who is truly one of the best voice actors out there.
For sure.
And Julie Kavner obviously has one of the greatest voices out there. She's got one voice, but she's got one of the greatest voices out there. And like, it's crazy how fortunate the elements coming together were for this show.
And like, Nancy Cartwright came in to read for Lisa.
Mm-hmm.
And then, I don't know what happened, but she ended up being Bart. And again, Yardley Smith, fucking perfect voice.
Dude, I love, they're all perfect cast. Let me ask you this. This is a bit of a tangent. So I'm like, for the first time in years, I am actively caught up with The Simpsons. I have been watching this season, and I am up to date, not on the whole show, but on this season. And I feel like in the last few seasons, obviously, everyone talks about how Marge her voice is waning and she's sounding older. But in the last like few episodes, for some reason, I feel like it sounded closer to normal. I don't know if I'm just getting used to it, or
I feel like they might be like writing to that, because honestly, Marge's voice only really like, I guess it only really like makes me raise an eyebrow nowadays when
they get her to yell.
Yeah, when she has to yell, she has to yell, or she has to like sing and everything like that, you know. But I noticed lately they haven't been making her do that,
right?
So I feel like that might be part of it. Honestly, bro, if I'm gonna be honest, I think the reason it's like this is because Marge's voice isn't one-to-one Julie Kavner's natural voice. Julie Kavner's natural voice is like a little higher than like Patty and Selma.
Right.
What she does is she kind of like goes higher to do Marge. And I think as she got older, it became more difficult to go higher. So what I think they should do is they should just let her talk normal and then pitch it up. Yeah.
Maybe they're doing that. Yeah.
If they are, I think it's a good call.
Bro. I mean, there's like, obviously we know from South Park that like magic can be done from pitch shifting. Like, oh, when you hear Trey Parker do Cartman in the booth, it does not sound like Cartman. Mm-hmm. It's just the intonations, but man, it's it's so interesting. Honestly, I also want to ask the audience, by the time this comes out, we'll be getting close to the end, if not at the end of Simpsons season 33. Should we do a Simpsons season 33 episode after it ends? Just like, we don't even need to go through every episode, but I kind of just like, I'm so fascinated by it and I'm enjoying it so much. And I just kind of want to like, should we talk about it when it's done? Yeah.
I wouldn't mind.
There's actually an episode I'm going to talk about later as we, just because of how it relates to one of the ones in this season. So,
nice.
The other important thing, all right, let's get back to season one. The other important thing that I think was like wildly important for for this show to be able to flourish in the way that it was, is that James L. Brooks had such an impeccable track record that he was able to basically negotiate that Fox couldn't really interfere creatively with the Simpsons. Mm-hmm. They got to do what they want, which is actually something we talked about in our first Futurama episode, because that is something that Matt Groening, because of his experience on The Simpsons, expected when they went to do Futurama. And then Fox obviously wanted a little bit more creative control, which we talked a lot about the episode iRoommate, which we both love. But that was infamously the episode that the studio was like, well, you got to do this, you got to do this, you got to do this, you got to do this. And they did it. And then the studio was like, well, this is bad. So I just thought that was interesting that maybe Matt Groening wasn't quite privy to how television normally works because he got spoiled working with James L. Brooks.
Well, spoiled. Yeah, absolutely.
So they make this. So they start making season one of The Simpsons, 13 episode order. It is they put together a writing staff and it is show run by a trio of Matt Groening, James L. Brooks, and Sam Simon. Now there are some criticisms to make about their process here. The first episode that aired is Simpsons Roasting on an Open Fire, which was meant to be the Christmas special later in the season. And it was written by Mimi Pond, who takes issue with the writers because she felt she was unfairly ousted from that room for being a woman, which like,
I didn't know that.
Yeah, I wrote down
that the first episode of The Simpsons is written by a woman. And it's so funny because you can go through the episode list and you could probably count on all 10 of your fingers how many episodes are written by women.
Exactly. And there is, I can't remember what producer kind of made that call. It might've been James Brooks but they kind of pointedly were like, we think this is like meant the men should be in the writer's room type of situation, which is a fucking bummer. Nice. Granted, they have great, great writers, but like Simpsons Roasting on Open Fire is a good script.
It is.
It's a good script.
Honestly, and you know what? Because the pilot is supposed to be Some Enchanted Evening, which actually ended up at the end of the
which
season.
Which is bizarre. It's so bizarre. Like, I don't know if you could ever find another situation where the first episode ended up being the finale.
The one aired last.
Yeah.
And personally, I think that Simpsons Roasting on an Open Fire is miles better as a first outing
than
Enchanted Evening. Because, like, look, right? I don't know if we actually talked about it on here. But I know me and you have talked about it. I just don't know if we talked about it on here. But when you start a show, you got to start it at the point where, like, why are we starting here? What changes? Why is this the inciting incident? Like, why is this where we're picking up at? And Simpsons Roasting is when they get the fucking dog.
They get the dog.
So it's perfect. Like, that's when the family becomes whole.
And I don't know if, like, and I also definitely think it's possible. Because, like, so here's how it went down. They started animating the show. I didn't learn this until today. So I knew that the reason they moved it is because they got some of their first drafts back. And they were like, wow, 70% of this episode needs to be reanimated. Like, we got issues with 70% of this.
They said they watched it and everybody was silent. And then somebody said, I think it was Jim Brooks, he said, this is shit. And then I guess it was man, I don't remember Gabor, who's like head of Class Gizupo. Mm-hmm. He's like, what do you mean shit? And then he said, a foul substance that yada yada yada. Like he defined it, like he'd be in a smart ass.
Very James Brooks.
Yeah. And then Gabor was like, I don't know, maybe this shit isn't funny. And like yeah, like so they didn't have like a good relationship over there or yeah. whatever. And I think like I think when they got an Emmy or something like that, and then one of them turned to Gabor and said, I guess this shit is funny after all, huh?
Yeesh.
There's a lot of petty shit the going drama, on over man. There, bro. Some sick shit. The tea is hot. You know what
the
I mean?
The thing that I read today that I was like, wow, that was that bad, was that they said that they basically said that if the second episode had come back with similar oh, yeah. issues, they were going to abandon the show.
They were
going to
pull a plug.
Which is nuts. To think about if that had happened. If they had fucked up, like even if they had fucked up two episodes and then everything after that was fine, maybe we'd never have known. Maybe we would have lived in a world where The Simpsons didn't happen.
Right,
like,
yeah. that's and what does that even me. Fucking look like, bro? Right. Like, what does television look like without, you know what I mean? But it's, again, it's like, it's one of those things where, like, all of the stars just ended up, like, aligning and everything was in their favor. It reminds me of the Charlie Brown Christmas special. It went through something similar where, like, they were like, okay, we're going to make this Charlie Brown thing. We've never animated a full Charlie Brown thing before. So now everybody has to figure it out. And we only have, it was like either 6 or 9 months, some insanely short amount of time to put it together. And it was sponsored by Coca-Cola. And then they watched the episode, they watched the Christmas special back. And then they were like, oh my God, this is so bad. It was just looking at all the animation mistakes. And they're like, this is stupid. This is bad. And then, like they got to the credits and whoever typed out the credits misspelled Schultz. Oh. And then that just kind of broke everybody. And then one of the producers, I think, said, yo, I think we just killed Charlie Brown. Like, I think this is it. Like, I think this is it. Like, this is over. And then,
oh my God.
Ed Levitt, who was one of the animators on the special, he stood up and he said, they're going to play this for 100 years. And everybody thought he was insane. Like, they, like, laughed him out the room. And it's, like, the most important Christmas special ever at this point.
Dude, it's truly, truly one of the most important in television history.
Yeah. And this is the same thing for The Simpsons, bro. It's, like, you come so close to thinking, like, this is the worst thing.
Right.
And we fucked this up and this is it. There's nothing's going to come from this. But that always happens when you reinvent the wheel because you right. never understand what you just did. You never understand that you just kind of created something that's not like anything else.
Right. I agree with you that this episode feels like a better, like I see how Some Enchanted Evening works as a pilot. Because it establishes the family dynamics. It's like it, sure. it. I see how that was the first story they wrote, but this and I can't decide if it's because, I can't decide if it's like it's possible that they went back and adjusted things when they knew that it was going to be the first one, or maybe it's because it feels this way because it was always supposed to be the special. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it starts with that title card. It's the exactly. Simpsons Christmas special. Yeah,
yeah, which I think is kind of cool as the first episode of the show because it feels like an extension of the shorts where it's like, oh, they got the shorts, then they got a Christmas special, and then they got a show. Even though that's not how it happened. You know what I mean?
Right.
And so, but the thing that like, A, yes, the dog tying it all together in the end is makes a huge impact on like this working as a pilot, but also just the opening after. So A, the opening showing the school, showing the school.
What I wrote down. I know exactly what you're about to say.
it illustrates the characters perfectly. It brings it, it like explains that all of the characters in the opening are like, it's like a good concise illustration of like what makes these characters. To me, other than maybe Lisa.
Lisa's naked.
Right. Yes. That is something I always noticed.
Yeah.
Which is bizarre. But The other thing that I think works in its favor is Marge writing her Christmas card.
That's
Marge
what it is.
Writing the Christmas card feels like the perfect way to introduce the family. Mm-hmm. And it works
so fucking good. There's a picture of Grandpa in the back, and she says, Grandpa's still with us. And you got Homer struggling with the lights. And then she says, like, Lisa got straight A's. And then there's the, we love Bart.
You know what I mean? We love Bart.
They get everybody in there, and you, by the end of her doing that, you fully understand all of the characters.
Right.
I can't see the show starting any other way. It's just a brilliant way to start the show off.
It's perfect. It's the perfect opening sequence. There's things about it that I'm curious about. Like, they talk about Snowball getting run over, and so they got their new cat. That feels like were they going to reference that in any episodes before this?
Right.
Or, you know, like, was that written in when they were like, oh, this is the pilot now? Like, you know what I mean? Like, I'm so curious about that. Do we see Snowball in episodes that were written before The Simpsons roasting on fire? I know we don't see the dog.
I don't know. I don't think so.
So interesting. Yeah, but literally one of my notes is, this is such a good pilot, even though it actually wasn't meant to be, question mark. It's such a good way to start the show. Immediately, like, there's so many characters that it introduces immediately. Like, Skinner is there. Mo, Barney, they introduce not only Flanders, but Homer's sort of rivalry and inferiority complex with Flanders. You got Milhouse, you got Patty and Selma. You fully understand Patty and Selma's dynamic with Homer.
There's this fucking, that's why I keep saying that, like, I don't think this is as different from the show as, like, we always thought it was. Because there's this fucking brilliant scene where Patty and Selma are down-talking Homer, and Lisa gives this insane speech about how, like, them talking shit about him is, like, them talking shit about her because she's an extension of her dad, and, like, all this, like, super intelligent shit for an 8-year-old to say. And that's Lisa. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know, man. They kind of got it. They kind of nailed it, bro. It's really fucking good.
I agree. I think this also is episode also illustrates what I love the most about season one, which we'll talk about as this whole thing goes on. And it's that, like, the premise isn't comedic. The premise here is not a comedy premise. The premise is that, I mean, granted, aspects of it are, the whole, like, Bart wasting all of their Christmas money because he gets a tattoo is comedic. But the crux of the conflict is that plus Homer didn't get his big Christmas bonus because the power plant is greedy. Like, they even spell out, like, we just didn't want to cut any of the bonuses for the executives, and so you don't get your bonuses. So the premise is that it is literally a dad who can't afford to get his kids presents. That is not funny.
At all.
That's not a funny idea. And like a lot of these episodes this season, the premises aren't inherently funny. They all stem from familial issues or insecurities or even just straight up depression. And that's to me the thing that makes season one stand out. I don't necessarily think it's the comedy. I don't necessarily think it's, I mean, granted, the animation is very different, but that's just the visual that helps you see that it's different. I think if it was animated exactly the same as seasons 2 through 8 or whatever, it would probably, you know, the thing that would make it stand out is these premises that are not as inherently comedic. Granted, there's plenty of episodes that aren't inherently comedic throughout the show, but, like, they're heavy in this. Like, that's a heavy premise.
A lot of these episodes, the act break, whether it be in the first act or the second act, is just kind of like a character just being sad, and it just fades out. In this one, Homer just hangs his head. When he looks at, like, the Flanders' lights and, like, how shitty his house looks, he just hangs his head and the screen just fades to fucking black, bro.
Dude, like, it's that they do that a lot in this season, and it's like it's going out on dramatic beats instead of outs on comedic beats, which is very rare. Like, that's, like, kind of the thing that these shows would become known for. Like, these adult animated shows, like, they're all, you always have a joke out into the act break. And these were just dramatic, sad beats. And I think that adds to the slightly different tone of this season. But yeah, like, you're right in that, like, the jokes that are in it, they don't feel all that different than jokes you find in season 2, 3, or 4, you know? It's still like the DNA of the show is still here. You see how it evolved into what it became. Even if this still feels like it's got these other aspects that make it feel a little different. One of my favorite things about this season, but in this, I guess I'll talk about them as we go on, but in this episode in particular, when, you've got the premise that Bart's going to go pull off Santa's beard and it turns out to be Homer, which is a funny premise. It's a funny premise. Like, kid pulls Santa's beard off, turns out to be his dad. But what I like about it is that, like, Homer doesn't I feel like in some later Simpsons, you might expect the strangling, you know, you might expect him to just get super pissed at him and he gets mad for a second, but really Homer just immediately opens up to Bart and says, here's what's happening. I can't afford Christmas presents. Like, this is why I'm doing this. And it's sweet. Like, it was a sweet moment where he's, like, letting Bart in on the drama that's going on in his head. And and there's a few moments like that in this season that I feel in this season more than I feel in later seasons of the show.
The thing I love about Bart in this one is that, like, once he finds out what's going on, he's super supportive. Like, he's like, okay, Dad, now we got to figure this out. You know what I mean? And, like, when Homer is, like, literally out of it, Bart is the one that gives him the pep talk. Bart is the one that stays optimistic.
Right.
You know what I mean? And, yeah, I don't know. I really like that. And, you know, that's not to say that it doesn't happen later on, because it definitely does. But
right,
I really appreciate that about this.
Me too. I think this is a really good episode. Really, really great pilot. It's a great pilot. You know, I feel like I never really thought about this one much as a pilot in terms of, like, up there in the upper echelon of, like, quality animated pilots. I was like, oh yeah, Simpsons season one is different, but, you know, then it's The Simpsons. And now rewatching it, I'm like, this is a really good pilot. This is up there. This is really, it's really strong. Yeah. You got anything else? You got anything else about Simpsons Roasting on Open Fire before we start moving on?
You're going to hear me say this a lot during this episode, but I fucking love how it looks.
I do too.
I wrote that.
I love the looser season one animation. It's really charming. Yeah. It's just charming.
And it's when they're watching the happy little elves on TV, Lisa's sitting on Abe's lap. And I thought that was really cute.
Oh, that is cute.
And my last note is that I love that when they just, like, the moment that Homer decides to bring the dog home is when it, like, jumps in his arms and he's, like, cursing the dog out. He's like a loser. He's this, he's that. And he jumps in his arms and he's like, oh, but he's a Simpson. And I think that's so nice.
I love that so much. Yeah. It's so good. And even just, like, that whole premise at the dog track of them being like, we got the sure thing. And even Bart calling out initially, he's just like, I've seen all the TV specials. I've seen all the Christmas specials. There's always a miracle that saves the day at the end. It happened to them. It happened to them. It happened to them. And it's going to happen to us. And then for them to subvert that, because they still, like, obviously Santa's little helper comes in and does save the day and kind of fixes everything. But it's not. It didn't save it in the way they expected. They didn't get all the money and get everyone the gifts. They completed the family. They completed the family. It's just a smart episode, man.
Yeah,
good start to the fucking show.
Yeah.
It's good. All right, should we move on to Bart the Genius?
Let's do it.
All right. So I, my first note is I really like the season one title sequence. It's
I do too. This is the first one with it.
They just took out a lot of, they changed a lot of the stuff after season one. Like some of the gags. Like there's
Stop.
And it all looks a little different too. Like the color of the school is different, and mm-hmm. there's some different background stuff. Like later you see in the intro sequence, Burns and Smithers are like behind Homer, and this one it's just a dude eating a sandwich.
Yeah, something like that.
Like, I'll say this again. Like, I like how it looks. It's like looser. I like the backgrounds. I like the TV. If you notice in the cartoons that curse intro sequence that we cut together, the TV I used is from season one, not from the rest. I used the original one.
That's the season one couch gag too. Actually, that's in the title sequence.
It is. Yeah. I think it's like the second or third episode, that they use that one.
This one has one of my favorite couch gags, when Bart comes flying up and then like when they cut to the TV, you see him fall down. It's one of my favorite ones ever. I love that shit.
It's so funny because it's like one of the few that actually does something with the TV screen part.
That's why
of the
I love
title
it.
Sequence. And it's the first one. And it's the first mm-hmm. one. It's the first couch gag we ever saw. It's kind of nuts. Right. Okay, so my first note after this is, so this whole opening where they're playing Scrabble, which makes so much sense for like, also, I guess we should point out, this was meant to be the second episode. This is correct in its order. Granted, there was supposed to be one more before it that wasn't Simpsons Roasting on Open Fire, but this is written as a second episode. And like Family Game Night makes so much sense for doing a family sitcom early on. Just like Family Game Night, what's their dynamic? How does this tie into the story here? My favorite part of the sequence though is how they drew Homer when Bart is explaining Quidgy Bug.
Bro, that whole scene is so fucking funny looking, bro. Like, everybody looks hilarious, especially Homer. It's so funny.
There's so many things about this season that you see they abandoned, like, in terms of how it looks. Like, there's so many front-facing shots of characters facing directly the camera.
They aren't scared of that. They just can't seem to nail the house, bro. Like, it's just like
it's
infinite doors, and sometimes the kitchen leads to the living room. Like, it's so weird. Like, not the living room, but like, you know, the front door. Like, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, rooms are like inconsistent or whatever. Like, man, there's a lot of things that that they would just never do. One thing that we didn't talk about in the pilot, actually, that's prevalent throughout this entire season, which is something that they've made note of, the fact that they've gotten rid of, is that they make Maggie suck her pacifier throughout dialogue, and they removed that because they felt like it was distracting.
I didn't even notice, so I guess it didn't distract me.
It didn't distract me either, but I know that that's something that they've made.
That's really interesting. There's so many, and there's so many things, like, I know they do some things like this, but I also noticed that they did, like, in a few episodes, they have, like, they'll do a unique tone or color shift in some kind of dream or some kind of dream sequence. Like, in this one, it's when Bart's trying to figure out the math problem, the train math problem. And all of a sudden, everything goes black and white. The characters look super different. They look like they're from a different cartoon other than Bart. But I really like that. There's a lot of those in this season, and I like them. They really stand out. I think the best one is Life on the Fast Lane, but
that episode is so fucking funny, bro.
It's really good. Wait. We'll talk about it. Oh, I forgot to rank. Funny. Shit, I have to rank before the end.
Okay.
I really liked that. I really appreciated that they kind of immediately were like, well, let's do some experimenting with how some of this stuff looks and sounds and feels. And I really like that sequence. It visually illustrates Bart's confusion in a really smart way.
I think with a lot of adult animated shows, because I think this kind of happened with King of the Hill too, like early on in like the first season, is that there's like this small insecurity where they're like, okay, we're making an animated show, and we're making this sitcom, and we want to make these characters feel like real people, so let's put that in front of it. But then there's this little insecurity that makes them go, ah, but why is this animated though? We got to do something that has to be animated. And I think that's why like dream sequences are like really prevalent.
Yeah, you might be right about that.
But like you said, they're all, I don't fucking drag my feet when they happen. You know what I mean? Like, they're all cool.
Right.
Because it just looks cool, bro. If you're a fan of just like loose animation and like stuff that just kind of like, it just kind of feels like a human touched it. You know what I mean? Like, this season is just like, I couldn't get enough of some of this shit.
Same. Another episode where they like set up characters well, like this is kind of our first real Martin stuff, and they immediately make Martin to be a little wiener.
There's Edna. Edna's here in this one.
Yes. Love Edna. Also, interestingly, so obviously this episode's called Bart the Genius, and Bart ends up going to another school because he cheats on his exam, but the other teacher is played by Marsha Wallace too. I'm pretty sure. It sounds like her, but it sounds like it's just a softer, it's like a softer Krabappel.
Yeah, sure.
I thought that was a nice touch. It was just like putting him in a little bit of a bizarre world. One of my favorite jokes in the whole episode, it's so dumb, is when he gets to school and he realizes he doesn't have a tie, and Homer, and it's really sweet. Homer gives him his tie and he's like, I'm going to teach you how to put on a tie. And it's just a clip on tie.
Yeah.
it's not a real tie. Homer doesn't know how to tie a tie. You put the little clips here.
Man, the one that's
so funny.
I got a couple that really make me laugh. The first one that really got me was, Homer's handwriting, when like he's
great,
like, this little piece, the skin is like, man, this little piece
gag.
Of shit, this little piece of shit, forged ass note that Bart sent, and then Homer hands over the check, and it's the same shitty ass handwriting.
It's,
and he's
so
just like,
good.
Okay. I like that one. I like when, well, first of all, I really like what Homer and Bart go through in this episode. I love that the reason Bart cares isn't because he wants people to think that he's smart, is because he doesn't want his dad not to be proud of him.
Totally.
Which I really appreciate. And I feel like if this was done later, I feel like the resolution would have been sweeter, because really it was just Homer just kind of getting really fucking mad.
Yes. Agreed.
Yeah. But, and when, so one of the jokes is they, when he sends them off to school, Homer gives him a kiss, and then Bart says, "You kissed me." I was like, "I'm your dad. There's nothing wrong with that." I don't think.
Yeah, that's pretty funny. One of them I loved is, so obviously Bart goes to school. It's a totally foreign environment to him, and all the kids are kind of bullying him in a nerdy way. But when they introduce themselves, they're doing all these like, which granted, like this was over the top. There, I don't think there's any school where kids are talking in palindromes.
They was blowing my shit, bro. I couldn't do it. That's why I wrote, bro, my next note is everybody in this class is so fucking lame.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
All of those kids are fucking, they're fucking arguing like, oh, free will is an illusion. Shut the fuck up.
Yeah.
Like, what the fuck?
But after the like whole palindrome thing where they're just like talking in palindromes, or there was another one where like they're mixing up letters or words.
It was like,
or,
they were doing backwards. So one of the kids was doing.
Well, it wasn't just backwards though. It was like
it was like
palindrome is same backwards and forwards. And then there was one that was like
it was something. It was like Latin, right?
Yeah.
Well, it was like,
there's one where I don't remember the word, but it's where all the letters are mixed up, right? Or no, he's talking phonetically backwards, and then one was palindromes. That's what it was. But and then when Homer comes in to say, he's like, how's the first day, kid? And he goes, os os, that's backwards for so-so. that's such a good kid, such a good bit. But this is another one that has like so much heart. Granted, I think you're right about the end. The end is angry dad versus getting a good sweet ending, because you have the opportunity for the sweet ending. Like, it's got the sweet ending, and then they just move it one step further into comedic Homer angry. But there's three parts in this that I think are just excellent from a heart standpoint. One is, I like when they go to the opera and they're just all gagging on it together. It's so cute. It's like, and even Lisa.
Lisa's on it, bro. I love that Lisa's on it, bro. That's what seals it for me.
And then it's not a comedic scene in any way. I love them playing baseball, them throwing the baseball. It's just them, like, it because you get the sense that Homer hasn't done with this with Bart, and Bart has felt like inferior, and like he's finally proud of him, and so they're out and they're sharing time together, and they're just actually spending time together. And I like that they don't play it for any jokes. Like, it's just them bonding, and that works so well for me. And then the final sequence before Homer gets angry, when Bart's final speech is great, where he is just like, I lied about this. I'm not a genius, but I think if this could bring us together, then it couldn't be bad. And like, I love the sentiment behind that. I think that's right. Like,
I do too.
It showed that they can be a loving, bonding father and son, in ways that don't have anything to do with his intelligence, you know?
Right.
And so, yeah, it's good shit, man. Bart the Genius. Great. It's a great episode.
Good shit. Only have two more things.
Yeah.
I've always loved You're Damned If You Do and You're Damned If You Don't.
Yeah, I suppose that is a paradox.
I love that he says that's a paradox. That lets me know that Bart understands what a paradox is. He just couldn't think of one.
Right. Exactly.
The way the plot resolves itself is so brilliant. When Bart he pulls that undercover thing, and then he goes, I can't fucking do this. And he flips it over and he confesses, and he hands it to the dude, and he looks at it and he says, misspelled confession. And then it just cuts. It's just so funny. That's the best way to end that.
it's such a funny gag. And then also, like, I like that it just, like, he had an opportunity to try and keep the charade going. And he just realized, like, I can't. Like, he just, like, I'm too exhausted lying by doing this.
Right,
like, but even, like, admittedly, like, kind of a smart move for him to be like, what if I did an experiment and studied the regular dumb kids? Like, pretty smart for Bart. Pretty smart.
Yeah. I love that, but that's another... Bart is just a normal kid. He's not, like, cartoonishly dumb. Right. Like, he's just, like, a normal kid. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. That's why I really appreciate that too, about the way they told this story, because it would be very, very easy for Bart just, like, not even know simple math when he shows up. You know what I mean? And for him to just kind of, like, I don't know, just like start guessing cartoon characters as answers or something, you know, something like that. You know what I mean? I feel like it's really the really easy way to go about it. But it's like,
for sure.
Nah, he's not dumb. He's just out of his element, you know?
Exactly. Which once we get to season two, like, I truly, one of the best episodes of the whole show is the first episode of season two.
Man,
I'm so excited to talk about that. Excited.
The way they animate him crying, I have never done before. I've never seen that shit. Breaks my heart. I make fun of it in my videos sometimes because I play that clip a lot.
Yeah.
But it breaks my fucking heart in context. It's so sad.
Agreed.
Can't wait.
All right, let's move on. Should we move on to Homer's Odyssey?
Let's do Homer's Odyssey.
So this is meant to be the third episode. We're pretty much on track, other than that first episode comes last now. And they obviously, the Christmas special comes later. But Homer's Odyssey is another heavy one. Homer loses his job.
Heavier.
Heaviest. Probably heaviest.
Arguably heaviest.
It's nuts. But there's some really good gags. Like, I think one of the first jokes in the episode is really funny. And it's and it's like Krabappel basically just chastising Bart and being like, we got to, like, watch out for Bart. We don't want this to be like our visit to the state prison. And then Bart just says, they don't even really spell it out. Prison just says, Bart just says, Mrs. Krabappel, I didn't unlock that door. The implication is that Bart let out some prisoners. It's pretty funny. This is the one and only Black Smithers appearance, right? One and only?
No.
I thought he...
Yeah, never mind. You're right.
I think so. Because I think in the next one.
He's white in the next one.
Unless he appears in, like, some Enchanted Evening, which I don't think he does.
No. So yeah, you are right. Black Splinter's by accident. Me personally, yeah, but yeah, it was an animation mistake. There was this weird guy on TMZ one time that was like chasing Matt Groening down at an airport. He's like, "What? Smithers was black. I think you guys should have kept him black." He was like, "Nah, bro, it was a mistake." And it kind of made Matt Groening sound a little crazy, but no, bro. Like,
it's just it was just
in retrospect, having the most
subservient
character, yes, in the show being one of the only black ones would have been the worst move they could have possibly done.
Right.
So I am glad that Smithers is white.
And then you also have what are the cops' names? Eddie and Lou, right?
Oh, yeah. Eddie is white.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, Lou. I'm sorry. Lou is the white one.
And it's
white.
Bizarre because he looks, because it's like the design is the same. It's such a trip.
It's so weird. I can get over blonde Barney, but like.
Dude, I know. Blonde Barney. Yeah. And black hair Mo.
I kind of
did too. And it flips between because they both appear in Some Enchanted Evening. Which is the last of the season after they had already fixed the colors in earlier episodes.
Right, yeah,
and
sure.
So it kind of went back and forth. The other thing that I like didn't think about until this one, because they showed Sherry and Terry's dad.
He's black.
And then also Sherry and Terry are the only characters who are like white
bro,
in the show.
What fucking video was that, bro? I don't remember. It was a couple videos ago. I made a joke about how I have this crack theory that Sherry and Terry are light-skinned black girls because they daddy black, and it was unproven. Like, I want to say like 5 to 6 years ago. It wasn't that long ago, but like they showed their dad again, and he's white now. Yellow.
Oh, he is. Okay.
He's actually yellow.
He's yellow.
But they are still like. But they aren't like they aren't even
also
like pigmented.
Because they're not
like,
yellow.
Yeah,
they're almost albino.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's wild.
Yeah, bro. I remember it tripped me up when I first saw it as a kid. But you know, one thing this episode made me realize that they don't do anymore, and I need them to do it again, is Bart and Otto are the fucking best. I love Bart and Otto.
Yeah. It's funny because like Otto, obviously he's made some bad life decisions. Like he's not meant to be a role model, but Bart looks up to him because he's so cool.
Yeah. Hey, Otto man. So,
yeah. Otto man.
Bart dude. Oh, come on, bro.
There's a great episode later where Bart just like sneaks Otto into living in
the
living
Otto
with
show.
Them, right? Yeah, the Otto show.
It's a good title.
It is.
The Otto
it
show.
Is. The Otto show is great.
That was a good title.
Man. And,
that's
I mean,
three.
This title is good. Homer's Odyssey.
That's a great title.
Yeah.
So look, right? So look, this would have even so Simpsons roasting on an open fire, right? What obviously wasn't supposed to be the first one. And in the actual order, this episode would have foreshadowed that one. Because when Bart sees Otto, what does he say? Oh, cool tattoo. I want a tattoo. And he gets
a fucking tattoo.
Yeah.
Actually had a few, like, we'll talk about it. I'll talk about it now because they set it up here. There's another joke that's in this one that is paid off later. And it's that when they get on the bus, Mrs. Krabappel is like, don't forget about the boy that stuck his arm out the window and lost his arm out the bus. And Bart's like, I was that boy.
Then
in Bart the General, they meet Herman, and he specifically says that's how he lost his arm.
He was that, Oh, right. Yeah. That's funny.
And they don't, like, that doesn't feel like something they even do now, where it's like a small just reference back to a few episodes prior. Everything kind of exists in its own world to a degree, pretty much after this, you know? Like, there's some things that call back, but that's such a small gag.
But for it to be shadowed is like really what the only thing I could think of that is like that is really foreshadowed within the same season is in Rosebud, Mr. Burns is too weak to pull a bear from Maggie, and he gets shot by her later. When it makes sense why he couldn't get the gun from or the candy
that's
from
true.
Her, because he yeah, that's you true. Saw that he was too weak to pull a bear.
Well, I think you better drop it. God, I can't wait to talk about those.
Well, I think
oh
you
God,
better
I love
drop-
the Simpsons. Oh man.
Oh, cool animation detail that they don't do anymore, but I really like. Homer's neck is too big for his collar, and there's like this little lump of like
a little lump.
Neck fat. Yeah, I love that.
I like that. There's so many things, like obviously we were talking about, we've talked about this before, and how like now The Simpsons has and I guess Fox animation in general has to be like they want everything to be super on model. Super on model. That's mm-hmm. what they're all about. But man, do I miss the off-model stuff. I mean, granted, it's crude in this season, but like, it gives it so much personality.
It does, absolutely.
And I really miss that. And I do think there's still cool things you can do with the modern animation style. But like, it's animation. Why do we need it to look? Why do we need to look the same? You know what I mean? Like, why does?
Yeah, especially Simpsons. You know, like. With
they're already yellow.
It's inherently more cartoony than everything else they got.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like with Family Guy, it's like it's supposed to be like a fucking stage sitcom, right? So like
right.
that it just makes sense for it to you know, they just try to make it close to life or whatever. But like yeah, dude, and so really honestly, because now they've gotten. Way it's back to being really loose, really expressive, and it's like characters like they move constantly throughout lines of dialogue. There's just been moments in newer episodes where I've just been like in awe of like just the way the characters are moving, the character acting or whatever. But there is like a patch. I want to say it's honestly when they first go to HD, it's like season 20 to like 25, 27, something like that, where it's just kind of dead. Yeah, you know what I mean? And like,
that's probably the era that I've watched the least of. So I'm getting there though. I'm almost done with season 13 right now on my watch through. So.
Oh, nice. You caught up
into
with
the
Jim's.
Al Jean era. Yeah, I know. I am. I'm like perfectly Jim's. Caught up with Jim's. Yeah. Man,
I was supposed to watch his top 10. Of these
I haven't watched his retro yet. I got to watch the 13 retro and the top 10. I'm excited.
I wanted to watch the season 1 before we did this, but I forgot.
Smart. Yeah. That would have been smart. So this, like we said, heavy episode. Homer loses his job because he's trying to go see Bart as he's visiting the power plant.
Mm-hmm.
He crashes a cart, gets immediately fired, and then can't provide for his family. And, just about kills himself. Real close to doing it.
I think that Simpson's about to kill himself, or he's just right. walking his boulder.
He's walking his boulder. But that's also the funniest gag, is that he fucking ties the boulder to himself and then walks.
walks
to the bridge. that's funny to me. And then like it works though, because he goes to do it, the family rushes to stop him, they almost get hit by a car, and he realizes, and it kind of gives him his will to live, is just like, I need to protect my family even if I can't provide for them, right? He's like that you guys could have gotten killed, I need to put a stop sign here. You know what I mean? And then he kind of gets caught up in this. I think that part of this episode that it all tracks but is least interesting to me is Homer becoming the like town safety guy. You know what I mean? I it all kind of moves along in a way that makes sense to me, but
right,
I'm more interested in the earlier stuff, and
likewise.
Yeah,
I'm not you know, like it's practically my note too. That's what's really funny about it, is that like I said that yeah, like I feel like all of the plot does flow really well, and it goes places that once it establishes itself, you feel like it would go. But I do feel like the sign stuff is like, I'm like, man, this is even for like and just like, you know, I know this isn't like completely the show that it becomes or whatever, but it's still kind of boring. I'm not gonna lie, like I'm not really a too big of a fan of the of all the stuff after he realizes that he has to put the stop sign there, which Same. Is a healthy chunk of the episode.
I like the end when he's like, he's talking to Burns and they're figuring all that shit out, and he gives the speech at the end. That's when it like all comes together for me. But yeah, it's like the whole process of him like finding his will to live in like unnecessary signs.
Yeah.
Which is kind of funny, but not, you know, not what I'm most interested in. But it is, but like, it is another example though of like this season being about real issues, not about like Homer not being able to provide for his family. Once again, is not a comedic premise. that is a real heavy premise.
It's rough.
Especially
for them to do it so early on.
The joke that I like most in this episode that I always think about, which I think I've said to you recently, is after he gets the stop sign put in and he succeeds, and he's trying to say that he's going to keep trying to help the neighborhood in the same way. And he says, if they think I'm going to stop at that stop sign, they're sadly mistaken, which is just a good wordplay for early.
It's really, good.
All right. Should we move on to 104?
There's one small animation thing too that I really like. It's really inconsequential, but I was like, oh, nobody's ever done that before. When Homer and Marge are in bed, they're laying in bed in the dark, and then Marge turns the light on and they're squinting because they were just in the dark and the light just turned on. So like,
right.
They're like, I thought that was cool. I've never seen a cartoon like that before.
Yeah. Especially because so often, especially even in this show, they do the thing where the whites of the eyes are visible through the dark, which I think is awesome animation wise, but yeah, obviously that's just no reality in there. Okay, so let's move on to 104, No Disgrace Like Home, which is such an interesting episode.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite ones.
It's a great episode, but it's also one that there's like truly no, almost no other episode like this one, I would say. So one thing I will say, that I thought about later, is that this is a place where the continuity of the season arguably messes up a tad, and it's because they go see Marvin Monroe, but then later in some enchanted evening she calls Marvin Monroe to get advice, and I don't think she would have done that after this
no
episode.
Way actually I'll take it a step even further, right? Why the fuck is Martin, and a couple episodes later in Call of the Simpsons, Marvin Monroe is one of the people studying Homer. He knows him.
That's a good point.
It's not like he would have forgot him, because he literally fucked the whole therapy spot up.
You're right.
So like he would have remembered him.
It is funny how Marvin Monroe was like a big character in this season. He's in three episodes, heavily featured character, and he's a character who they stop using immediately.
They kill him off screen.
Kill him. Yeah. they reveal that he's dead. In one of those clips. One of the clip shows, right? Or was it the 138th episode spectacular?
Yeah, it was that one. Yeah.
I remember that pretty.
I forget which one of them does the voice, but I heard that one of the reasons was just that. The voice they gave him, the guy who did it was just like, oh, I didn't realize how like horrible this is on my throat. I don't know if I can keep doing this guy.
Poor guy. That's rough.
Yeah. It's one of the main cast members. I forget who it is, but yeah, they were just like, all right, we might as well
kill him. Let me think. Who would that have been? I bet it was Harry Shearer. It feels like a Harry Shearer voice to me. although it could have been Azaria. So obviously the big thing about this episode that makes it feel different than everything else is like the crux of this episode is how Homer is embarrassed by everyone in his family. Mm-hmm. Homer is ashamed of his family,
right?
Which this, like, if you told someone who had seen, you know, any a number of other episodes of the show that this was the premise of an episode, they'd be like, what the fuck? That doesn't make sense. It's still, though, it all comes together in I think a great way. I love everything at the opening, like, picnic or whatever, the like power plant picnic. Even though it feels weird because of how we come to know the characters later, but like Bart is very much being Bart. He's trying to win the sack race, and then Homer stopping him. I like Marge getting drunk and having like a Marge musical sequence.
Yeah, I think
it's so good.
I think Bart and Maggie are the two that are in character this whole episode.
Totally.
But yeah, I don't know. Like, for the world that this episode creates, it still kind of feels natural. And that's why I think I'm fascinated by it. I think that's why it's one of my favorites. Because one of my favorites in, like, the whole show. Because it's just... Nice. It's just so, like... It's just really, really interesting. Like, especially if you just kind of knew the show for years.
Right.
And, like, just kind of seeing these characters like this. And... I really love the sequence where Homer sees like this really nice family at the picnic, and he's like, "All right, now we could go back to normal." And the guy's like, "What are you talking about?" And he goes in the car, and like his kids are like opening the door for each other, and like they're singing fucking B-I-N-G-O like while they're driving down the street, and then like the lights from heaven come down, you know what I mean? And he turns and he just has like the fucking family from hell. I love that entire sequence. I think it's so great.
I do too. I was gonna bring that sequence up in particular, and I fucking love the design of like the demon Simpsons. They look so really cool. Funny. It's another example of like me wishing that the show would do less on model stuff, because it's like you still see those characters in those models, but they are off model. Like, they're super different. Like, I feel like if they did something like that now, the shapes of their heads would be exactly the same, and they would just give them demon features. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I get you.
I love how it looks.
I love it. It's so good, and I love that the family that is so nice in this episode can be seen at Marvin Monroe's therapy spot when they go to sign up. They're just sitting there and they're all mad as fuck.
It was the family from the beginning that like drove into heaven in Homer's vision, or was it a different one?
If it's not them, then it's the family.
One in one of the windows.
Nah, I think if it's not them, I think it's the family from the ad they watch.
Oh, nice.
But one of the families that's supposed to be like the picture perfect nice one is there, and they're really upset. And I think that's really funny. And I love that at the end of the episode, the old McDonald, it comes back as a motif when they're like walking off.
Yeah,
and
that's true.
I think that shit is so good.
I just love that the solution in this episode is that their dysfunction brings them together. Like they're, it's so funny to me that they get together. They're doing this like shock therapy, which is crazy in general. Like shock therapy is nuts.
It's nuts, but that is also like one of the greatest sequences in the whole show, because it's so memorable. Like that.
100%. One of the most memorable sequences in the season for sure. It's so memorable. But like I love that, like, Homer's so mad. He feels like he doesn't have like his family. He's disappointed in his family, and then their dysfunction rewards them.
Yeah.
Because not only do they come together, but because they weren't fixed, they get twice the money that they put into it. And so
if we could back up a little bit, the way they get there is because they pawn the TV, and then Marge says, "Well, Homer, we could just pawn my engagement ring." He says, "We need $150. And I was like, he's implying that Marge's engagement ring isn't worth $150.
That's so funny. That's such a good bit. One other random thing I wrote down is that the design of the police dog in this is crazy.
It is. Yeah. Oh, man. That's such a specific thing to write down, but I know exactly what you're talking about because it is a crazy looking dog.
It is. Yeah, it's like, I mean, granted, like Santa's Little Helper is a weird looking dog, too. He's supposed to be a greyhound. He doesn't really look like a greyhound. But so theoretically, this police dog is supposed to be a German Shepherd, but... and I guess if I look at Santa's Little Helper next to a greyhound, I see how this dog got there from German Shepherd. You know,
I don't know, like, man.
But it's a weird looking dog.
Them bears in Call of the Simpsons look,
they look
real,
like bears.
Yeah, they look real season 5-ish. they could have figured it out. When they're at the therapy, this is fucking nuts. I'm not even gonna lie. Like, this is, I guess it's kind of funny because of how it was animated, but it is kind of rough when they're at the therapy and I don't remember what Bart says. Bart says something. Homer says, that does it. And he picks up a fucking lamp. He's about to bash Bart's head in with a lamp. And I was like, whoa, why is he doing that? And I do love that. Yeah, even though Homer is the one that wakes up and says, I am ashamed of my family. Why are we like this? When they get there, everybody's like, no, my nigga, you the problem. Like, everybody, right. Like, when he's like, wow.
That's
like,
true.
Why do
that's
you guys
true.
Act this way? Yeah.
That is very true. Is like, the whole episode is framed as though Homer is disappointed in his family. And then once they finally go to find out what the problem is. The problem is very apparently Homer.
Yeah, it's you.
that's where it lines up. That's mm-hmm. where it lines up with the rest of the show.
Right. Absolutely.
Man, that's good stuff. You got anything else about this one?
Looks like I got one. Oh, two things. I like how it starts with Bart and Lisa arguing. Homer asks what they're arguing about and says, we're arguing who loves you more. And Homer lets them go, which I think is really funny. And then he finds out that they're like, you love him more. No, you love him more.
You love him more.
Yeah.
That's a great bit. That's
a
so
great
funny.
Bit. I love that one. And I love, again, when Homer is trying to kiss up to Mr. Burns and he tells Bart to kiss him. And Bart says, kiss you? But Dad, I'm your kid.
Oh, fuck. I love this season, man. It's so good. Yeah. It's so good. Underrated. This whole fucking season is underrated.
Yeah, we got to stop acting like the show starts at season 2. It doesn't.
Dude, I've always... I mean, I do understand because it does feel... There is like a difference. There's a difference mm-hmm. between them. But like, I just really... Like the things I... The reason I love season 1 isn't the reason I love... the seasons 2 through 8 to like the rest of my favorite stuff, you know,
right.
Like it's different, but also in the same way, the reason I loved Pixelated and Afraid in this newest season, one of my favorite episodes in years, like 20 years.
Yeah.
It's not the same reason I love episodes in seasons 1 or seasons 2 or up right. through 8, you know, or through any of it. Like it's different. Like they've got different vibes. They've all got, there's the DNA is still there. There's still things.
Yeah.
There's still things about him, but yeah.
I do think there's an episode in this season where the entire show becomes whole. And we'll get to it eventually. But cool. There was one episode where I'm like, this is when, because the show definitely starts.
I think I know which one. I'm going to guess.
The show definitely starts with the family in the first one, but the one I'm thinking about
Is it Krusty Gets Busted?
No.
Oh.
It's before that. There's an episode before that where it's like, this is when the show becomes The Simpsons for real. Like, honestly. We'll get there. I'll let you know which part it is.
Hell yeah. Hell
keep
yeah.
the audience listening. You know what I mean? It's probably going to be in part 2 since we're splitting this. So.
That's right. This is already, we've already been talking for an hour and a half between our cold open and our first 4 episodes.
Jeez.
This is always the danger of us covering The Simpsons.
Yeah. Oh, man. What's going to happen when we get to, like, the seasons with, like, 26?
Dude, this is the shortest season.
Oh, man.
We might have to split them into four parts. We might have to cover a season a month when we get to the 22 episode season. 25. There are 25 episode seasons.
Jeez.
Okay.
It's rough.
Let's move on to 105, Bart the General.
Short intro.
So this starts out, Lisa's bringing the cupcakes in. I really like this intro because it shows the familial conflict. Bart wants the cupcake, can't get the cupcake for her class. And even though she drops it on the floor and then gives it to him, she still gives it to him. But then I love that the inciting incident of this episode is that Bart is trying to protect Lisa. Mm-hmm. That Bart sees this kid picking on Lisa, and Bart immediately is like, what the fuck are you doing? You know, he's like immediately just runs over and protects his sister.
And I love that it still felt like something he would do.
Yes.
I love totally. That, like, after all these years, that part isn't lost on him. I don't think he would let anybody, like, really fuck with Lisa that way, especially not some dude.
Agreed. Completely agreed. And this introduced Nelson, or is... is the first obviously like real no, use does. Of him.
They don't really, I think this is... they don't really go to the school. I mean, they go to the school in Bart the Genius, but like that's just kind of Milhouse, Richard and Lewis.
True. I don't know if he was even in the background or what.
Yeah, I don't know.
But this is the one where with the Herman joke, the callback, which is funny. And, mm-hmm. And then, yeah, the whole premise is like Bart needing to figure out how to face his bully, which is a very like so a lot of these premises are pretty standard premises. A kid having to face his bully. That's what this is. You know what I mean? Like, that's it.
Right.
How they approach it is, I guess, what makes it unique. And then I love Homer's bad advice. It's like, get him in the family jewels. But I especially love when Bart finally actually faces Nelson with that advice, and he tries to fight him, and he like first he sees Homer appears next to him, and he's like, remember what I said, carried family jewels. And then he tries to fight him, and he can't get anywhere. And then he appears again, and he looks over, and the imaginary Homer just goes, ah. he goes, I don't know. And then he gets his ass kicked. I thought that was really good. And then it's a kind of an interesting episode overall. It's like it's like Bart. It's a kind of an episode about power and numbers, standing up to the oppressor. You know,
right.
He unionizes the kids.
Yeah. I love that. This is like, what did I write this? Oh yeah, here it is, right here. I wrote that. I love Grandpa Abe. I love Abe angrily writing like that letter to television, and he's like, I don't want to hear these are the words that I don't want to fucking hear on TV anymore. Bra, horny, family jewels.
It's so funny.
But I love that, like, this version of Abe is more angry and competent than stupid, which is really a reflection of Homer in these earlier ones, because that's how he is too. Homer isn't necessarily dumb. He's not the smartest guy, but he's not necessarily dumb. He's just kind of really mad.
Right.
And that's that. And Abe being like that shows where he got it from. I love that they give Abe something like this to do really early on. Which kind of sets the stage for like stuff like the hellfish stuff and everything like
totally.
That. Years totally. Years later. Bart crying when he's in the bathtub.
Dude, I was going to bring that up.
So fucking sad.
It is, man. I was going to bring that up specifically. It's granted, like the show, like we talked about Bart Gets an F earlier and how that doesn't shy away from the emotion of him feeling like he failed. But like, I love that early Simpsons really dwells in some of that emotion, you know, like, and I granted the show doesn't abandon that, but it feels very It feels very like a very major aspect of the season. And I love that. I love that a lot. I'm a big fan of the training montage. There's some cool stuff in the training montage. I like the creativity of them, like what kind of training they do. Also that sunset shot where you just see the silhouettes climbing up and down the, I like that shot a lot. And then, yeah, it's like, and I guess I also like the solution is funny. It's like signing a peace treaty.
The treaty,
it's like real, a real war. Like it's like, it was a real war.
And I love it ending with everybody still getting cupcakes. Mars just kind of comes in with more cupcakes and everybody eats and everybody's fine.
Yeah, I do like the solution is cupcake based.
Right before all of that, there's that like shot of that kid kissing Lisa. That shit is crazy.
That is crazy.
That shit is crazy.
Was that supposed to be, you know what? Hold on.
So it's definitely a reference.
Yeah, so, I think it's, there's a, is it, was it a sailor or something?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yeah. It's a reference. It's a reference to an old photo that was after one of the, well, let me see. Let's see. World War Sailor Kiss. I think it was after a certain war. There was like an iconic photo of, after they've returned home, of a sailor kissing his bride or whatever. Mm. Yeah, it's specifically a reference to that photo. It's framed exactly the same way. It came to symbolize the end of World War II. So yeah, obviously this is very war-centric, which is actually why the tag is so fucking good in this. where Bart's just like, it's very funny to be like, this was about war, but war is serious and war is bad, except for, and then you just list all of the wars America started. It's pretty funny. And then also, and the Star Wars trilogy.
Yeah.
It's great. This is a fun one. This is not one of my favorite ones, but there's really good stuff in this one.
Right.
Oh, you know what? We forgot to talk about another crazy animation sequence in this one, when Bart daydreams after he's supposed to fight Nelson,
right,
and he's waiting for the day to end. Another really cool, interestingly animated sequence. They did those like 3 or 4 times in this season.
This is the one with his funeral, right?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I think so.
Let's see, there was one. Well, okay. When Nelson, there's that shot of like just Bart's face from the front and like Nelson is just like punching him in the face.
Yeah.
Nelson is punching him so ridiculously slow. I was screaming at him. I'm like, Bart, put your fucking guard up. Like, dude, like, block, like, you know what I mean? Like, do something.
He just
didn't do it. I guess the only other thing I have is that the animation in this one in particular, there must have been like a lot of retakes. On just like re-recording lines or like adjusting lines of dialogue or whatever, because like the lip sync is like off it in the motherfucker in this one, bro. Like,
I noticed that in a few episodes too. And Bart the Genius, which obviously was the second one they animated, so it makes a lot of sense that they would have to do a lot of fixes in that. But I noticed a lot of stuff with some of the class kids, and like the teacher at his new school had like, it looked like they were even looping some of the same animation to fix some shit, you know? And so like, I think the reason that they put, granted, Simpsons Roasting on Open Fire makes sense for the time of year and it's a good pilot. But also like it was the 8th episode they animated. They probably got their shit together by episode 8.
Right, you know what I mean?
They looked at it and they're like, this looks good. Let's use this. Yeah. Good one. Amen. Good episode.
Let's go to the GOAT.
My favorite.
Yeah, your favorite.
I'm going to hit pause, though, because I'm going to hit the bathroom before we go.
Sick. I'm going to blow this candle out. I've been itching to blow this candle out.
All right. And that's where we're going to end part one of our Simpsons Season 1 conversation. If you want to hear the rest of it right now, you can sign up for the Patreon. We always put it all out at once on the Patreon, including the video version. Otherwise, you're going to have to wait till next week for part two. And with that, I want to say thank you to Jake Neutron for our theme song. Thank you to Carrie Feek for our artwork. Thank you to Michael Younes for producing and editing the podcast. Thank you to Toonrific Tariq for being my co-host.
Yeah,
and
man.
thanks Thanks to The Simpsons for being The Simpsons. And thanks to all of you for listening. Yeah. Love you guys so much. But also, f*** you.